Okay. Now, as you know, what we do on Sundays, and I will never tire of saying this, is that Sundays work for people who want to follow Jesus, right? In fact, I think it's fairly evident that it doesn't matter where you are, but if you think about it, the idea of dancing around like a mad thing when you haven't been drinking for a while would seem very strange for some people. But there is something within us that even when things are a bit tough begins to come to life as we start to praise God. So that's part of what we're doing. We're trying to help one another follow Jesus, whatever level we're at, and wherever you are, you can do that this morning. I've left Carl on. If you hear a grumbling noise in my pocket, it's the... Yeah, no. He has to be closed down properly, otherwise... Otherwise, he sits there and grumbles all morning. In fact, we'd been messing around with it at dinner on Friday, and I got into the lift on my own, and there were two other people in there who we didn't know, and this grumbling noise started. And I had to get him out of my pocket and explain what was happening. Actually, I should turn this off, otherwise we'll get a... interference. The other thing is that we're not really interested in information this morning. What this is about is formation. It's about shaping us. And so one of the reasons for reading the Bible when we do is that there is a strange power in the Bible that has the power to shape us and put us together. Now, you'll remember that we've been talking about this word hineni. This is the last morning I'm going to do that. Which means here I am, you have my total attention. And the purpose in doing this, which I haven't restated from time to time, was, but I did say in the first week, was that our goal is to be close, is to get close enough to God so that if he wants to talk to us, he can. And as a result of him talking to us, we're able to take a new direction and understand what's next. And we're going to put a little twist in that this morning. So, as I said to you, in the first week in January, it may turn out that if we can say, Hineni, here I am to God, we may turn out to be the people we've been waiting for. Yeah? And that came back to mind for us on Friday, when somebody had written a song with that sentence at the end of it. Anyway, the story so far. If you hear the words Hineni, if you hear God speak to you and your response is here I am, you can guarantee that you'll be taken out of your comfort zone. It happened, first of all, the first time it occurs in the Bible, to Abraham, who was experienced in his faith. In fact, so much so that even today he's recognised as being the father of three religions. And he'd had a long walk with God. And interestingly, the issues which came up were in the area of family. And of course, when we get into family, our emotions are most tense, we're most stressed, life is most difficult. And there he heard God speak to him and he said, here I am, I'll do what you want. And then we've got Moses, whose life had been very, very different. He was somebody who wasn't part of any community. He didn't know whether he was an Israelite or whether he was an Egyptian. He didn't know whether he was a prince or whether he was a farm labourer. He was stuck in all this stuff. And then into that context, God came. We know he had issues with God because a whole chapter, almost a page and a half, I think, is given over to his arguing the toss with God about what he would do and what he wouldn't do. And then last week, we dealt with another kind of story, which was really one of those which is quite moving, about this little kid who wore a priest T-shirt and God spoke to him. And he'd had no experience of hearing God talk to him. And it's perfectly possible that wherever we are, if you look at Abraham, you look at Moses, you look at Samuel, we can hear God speak to us. So it doesn't really matter what your situation, what the conditions are. And when we get to the punchline this week, what I'm going to be really pressing into is if you find there are sort of psychological barriers that say, that's okay for them, but I don't think I'm good enough, I don't think I'm the kind of person, I don't think I have the kind of personality, I don't think I have what it takes to communicate with God. You might even say, I may have what it takes, but at the moment I am so scared of what might happen if I talk to God, if God spoke to me. Then we'd like to get a little time in the break between this morning and lunch to pray with you. So our tendency, of course, is to rearrange the world to fit inside our comfort zone. And when we change and come and say to God, here I am, then we are bound to be outside of that. So far we've learned that you're never too old to hear God, which I find increasingly reassuring. Everywhere I go at the moment, I'm in the group that gets stood up and prayed for being the ones who've been around a long time. I find that problematic. But to be still standing at the end is part of what it's about. This guy, Pete Gregg, was saying that it's very rare that when God says something, it's actually worked out in one generation. And which is why we want to invest so much in your kids, because to some extent they're the ones who we have to focus on now in terms of being able to be like Samuel and hear God talking and respond to him. Anyway, the second thing is that God can cope with a good argument with Moses. You can have a go at God as much as you like, and he will come back to you. Really possible. And if you don't find yourself occasionally, I know this will offend some of you, but I say it because others of you will understand. If you don't find yourself wanting to swear in the presence of God because things have upset you so much, you're probably actually not communicating in reality. If you don't find that some of your worst and most temperamental moments are in front of God, then you're probably missing your chances to talk to somebody who really understands when you feel absolutely beside yourself. Next thing we've learned is that it's possible to hear God's voice, possible to learn. We saw that with Samuel. And then we also made the point last week, do you remember that we talked about the kind of things we would expect to happen for us if we, as we developed, as we became more mature. I obviously tore the page off, took it home, intending to make notes available. But we went through a whole list of stuff and said that while we would expect that to happen, in practice, it doesn't happen. And sometimes life becomes more difficult for us just simply because it's, you know, just the pressures of life. It's possible for Rosie to be able to listen to what's going on, but if she wanted to concentrate on God and to hear from him, then there's a real skill and real practice in being able to do that when you've got kids around you, for instance. I know that Sue Sandberg was joining in with what was a 24-hour worship session on Saturday. And we were chatting before lunch, and she was saying to me that to get more than 3.5 minutes without being distracted was an opportunity that she really wanted to take. Hey, we're all in that position. Which, of course, is why we focus in our encounter meetings on what we do, and we don't try and do the same sort of stuff on Sunday morning. Because you could actually see this morning, we had about 25 minutes of good time into the meeting, and then although we could have gone on for longer, for the kids they'd had enough. You know, they were getting the most out of it in the early part because they're not constrained by trying to look cool like we are. Hey, anyway, I've made that point. Now today we're coming and dealing with another guy who lived, hey, you've heard of things like the Bronze Age and the Iron Age, haven't you? And lived on the cusp of Bronze Age and the Iron Age. And you've got to remember that while people in Britain were running around with no clothes on, painted blue, and living in mud huts, there were huge, huge civilizations elsewhere. And Isaiah was part of one of these. And interestingly, now this is quite important for those of you who read the Bible a lot. The bit I'm going to choose is not on the first page of Isaiah. It's not on the second page. It's not on the third page. It's not on the fourth page. It's not on the fifth page. It's only on the sixth page that we get into what I'm wanting to talk about this morning, because it's called Isaiah's Commission. And hey, if this isn't interesting to you, just leave this to one side. But for those who it is, if you look at Jeremiah, if you look at Ezekiel, if you look at lots of other guys, in fact, if you look at Moses, what happens to them in terms of God calling them is almost the first episode in their lives. But here you've got a different situation, because you've got five pages of Isaiah prophesying to people, and then suddenly, into the mix of him doing the stuff, God commissions him. Now, I'm sure there are some people who would have said to me, done that, ticked the box, got the t-shirt, God has commissioned me, has called me. But you know, there are staging posts along the way. We like to think of the Christian path being a journey. But it's not so much of a journey sometimes, unless it's a journey that includes hauling yourself up a cliff face and moving on to a new level. And that's what this is about this morning. So, let's read the story. Right. In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord seated on a throne, high and exalted. The train of his robe filled the temple. Above him were seraphs, each with six wings. Nobody knows what a seraph is, except they have six wings. You know? For all we know, they could be a new kind of stealth fighter. This is the one occasion, I think, when they occur. With two wings, they covered their faces. With two, they covered their feet. With two, they were flying. And they were calling to one another. Holy, holy, holy is the Lord Almighty. The whole earth is full of his glory. At the sound of their voices, the doorposts and thresholds shook, and the temple was filled with smoke. Woe to me, I cried, I'm ruined, for I'm a man of unclean lips, and I live among a people of unclean lips, and my eyes have seen the King, the Lord Almighty. Then one of the seraphs flew to me with a live coal in his hands, which he had taken with tongs from the altar. With it he touched my mouth and said, see, this has touched your lips, your guilt is taken away and your sin atoned for. Then I heard the voice of the Lord saying, whom shall I send, who will go for us? Okay. And I said, here am I, send me. Right. So here's the story. You've got Isaiah, who is already bringing God's message to a lot of people. And anchored in time, because it's dated by the fact that King Uzziah had died, he sees God. Now, we don't know much about how he sees God, and we've talked a bit about this. It could have been a material thing, not a materialisation, but a material thing. You know, there have been people who have seen angels. If you get a chance over lunch, talk to Dawn over there, about her contact with an angel that was pretty unambiguous, but what was he wearing? Ordinary clothes. Nothing to stand out. Okay. So that it wasn't until after the encounter in an airport terminal in the United States she realised what had been going on. Okay. Now, that was pretty real. There have been occasions, and, you know, this stuff is possible. I was listening to somebody talking about the Exorcist on radio this morning. And I don't know whether you know, but the film The Exorcist is a dramatisation of a story which actually happened back in 1949 Only it wasn't in The Exorcist. It's a little girl, is it? Yeah. But what it really happened to was a little boy, and it wasn't one priest. It was two priests. It was a whole community. And the guy who wrote the film said that the reason he put it together was because he believed demons were real, and if demons were real, then it wasn't a big step to say that angels were real, and if angels were real, then God was real. And so what has been sort of turned into a really sort of bad thing, particularly by people from our sort of church background, was actually written as a religious tract in the first place. I've never got around to seeing it because I don't like scary things. So, but I really must. I've recorded it several times but thought, got to watch something else. Watch NCIS instead. That's more at my intellectual level. So I've read the story and talked to one of the guys who actually knew the background of that particular story. So these things can be real, but equally it can be a vision, right? So it's possible that somebody will see God, or you'll see something that's intense and spiritual. It may be dreaming, it may be a waking vision, it may be on that border where you don't know whether you're asleep or awake. It may be an awareness that God is there. But whatever it was pretty graphic, and he didn't make it up. Imagination does come into these things. Quite important to realise that imagination comes into these things. And you will, quite often, when you have communion in church, you will be encouraged to use your imagination to present yourself at the cross. Famous old children's hymn. I sometimes think about his cross and shut my eyes and try to see the cruel nails, the crown of thorns, and Jesus crucified for me. And it can step from being imagination into being vision. So let's just imagine for a moment. Here's Isaiah, and he's been working hard, telling people who don't want to hear important stuff about God. And he's in the temple. And he's thinking about what God is like, and he's looking around at all the pictures and symbols, all the audio-visual stuff they had there of God's holiness, smoke machines, smells, great stuff going on. He's looking around, music in the background, the sound of animals being killed and sacrificed to God, all of those things. And suddenly, he becomes aware of God. And whether literally or in his mind's eye, he can see these strange beings moving around. And he can hear in the back of his mind, holy, 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 Lord Almighty, the whole earth is full of his glory. And it gets louder and louder. And he suddenly realizes that there is God there. And of course, in the tradition for Israelites, the idea of seeing God was an ultimate no-no. Can't find much about it in the Bible, but there's often the inference that you can't see God and live. Well, of course, we do get examples like Moses saw God and lived, Isaiah saw God and lived, but they thought you wouldn't. And it's interesting, isn't it, how the presence of God can be so scary that you don't really want it around. You don't want to see God. So here's Isaiah's first response. He can hear what's going on. He says out loud, he says, I don't think we would say, I think it put woe is me, because that was polite version. I think he was going around saying, oh, you know, sort of whatever you would say under those circumstances. I am in deep trouble here. And why did he find he was in deep trouble? And he says this. He says, I'm a man of unclean lips, and I live among people with unclean lips. Now, what's he saying when he says that? Just so you know that I did look this up. he was using a figure of speech, wasn't he? He was using metonymy, where you talk of one thing, like, for instance, friends, Romans and countrymen, lend me your ears. It just means shut up and listen, right? So when he says, I'm a man of unclean lips, he says, I'm somebody and bad stuff comes out of my mouth. And loads of other people around, bad stuff comes out of their mouth as well. You get a whole list of this in Colossians chapter 3, verses 8 and 9. Paul lists some of the bad things. He talks about, he does mention obscenity. He talks about abusive language. He talks about being narked with people, malicious language. He talks about anger. He talks about hatred. And that's the kind of stuff. And what's he saying? I cannot trust myself to tell the story straight, because I've got vested interests. And you know, one of the biggest problems for those of us who stand up to speak is that we want to avoid vested interests. Because I look around and I see people and I think, I could have a real go at them. And they would never be sure that that's what I was doing. Yeah? And so you have to work really hard at trying to be... Hey, I have issues with integrity as much as anybody else. But to actually be really clear about why you're saying what you're saying. And for me, what it means is I try not to touch my emails on Saturday or on Sunday. I try to have as few conversations about people and their issues. So I would really find it difficult if somebody was in a really big problem and I talked to them about it before the meeting, because that would be running through my mind. And that would be, and that's okay. You know, I don't feel that's a particularly bad thing. One wouldn't want to be that insensitive that if somebody had got issues, you weren't taking them seriously. But of course, it diverts what you say. And if you are somebody who has got a tendency towards corruption in what you say, and you live in a community, and it's really interesting, he didn't say, God, I'm in trouble because I live with people who are really corrupt, who've got all bad stuff coming out of my mouth. He actually said, I'm like this, and I'm part of what's going on. And it's quite often true, isn't it, that people find us as Christians so unbelievably stuck up and self-righteous, because we have a tendency to talk about out there and not us. And we have to recognise we're cut from the same cloth as everybody else. And the weaknesses in our community are the weaknesses which we find in us. We look at wild consumerism outside, we've got the same disease. We've got the same tendencies. And of course, the negative bit of that, the really negative bit of that, is that because we know our own weakness, we think, who am I to say anything to anybody? I think Ruth and I were having a conversation. It certainly triggered it in my mind, whether we talked about it. We were talking about the fact that God continues to speak to us. And there's this beautiful image that you get where, I don't know whether you've ever been, I can remember on one occasion, I was staying somewhere, I'd come out of a hotel, and I'd got a fairly light-coloured jacket on, and probably New York somewhere. It was night time, and a car came past. And whether it was on purpose or not, it sprayed me with muddy water. And I looked down and I thought, that's okay, you know, just going to dinner with some people, not a problem. You get a few yards on closer to a street light and you look down again and you sort of begin to wonder. And sure enough, back up to the fifth floor, rickety lift in this particular hotel, and you have to change. But the closer you get to the light, the worse you look. And so that's a progressive thing with us. Don't expect that you're going to get holy, because the degree to which we get holy is a matter of degree. And the closer we get to God, the more we realise what rubbish we really are. But of course, we don't only realise how bad we are. We realise that nothing's that bad. Because Isaiah's problem, which he thought was terminal, was resolved very quickly. Because what happened, from the pure place, one of the seraphs went and got hold of a coal from the altar and went and put it on his lips. And I think that's scary. And Andy and I sometimes talk about this. I think I mentioned it once before. may have even been last week for some reason. But when I was a kid, one of the things I really loved doing at school was metalwork when we did forging. Partly because it wasn't detailed, you didn't have to keep checking your measurements. Partly because as a 12, 13-year-old, I was beginning to feel that I was getting stronger. And the thought of heating metal up to red hot and then pounding it into a point and twisting it and making a sort of poker and riveting it to a piece of metal was really great. But boy, that stuff was hot. And there were all sorts of rules that you had to observe with that. And the thought of standing there while somebody takes a piece of coke out of the altar and walks towards you. One of the reasons why he didn't have very many accidents was because kids knew it was hot. You know, you couldn't make a mistake with it. But that piece of coal coming before it towards you, you're left thinking, this is going to kill me. But it didn't. It touched his lips. I don't know whether he felt any better, but God said to him, your sin's dealt with. And I don't know what you're feeling like this morning, but if you're in a position where you're feeling you're incapacitated because of your weakness, and who doesn't? I couldn't do any work on preparation this morning. I just had to sit there for 3/4 of an hour praying and thinking and trying to keep myself awake, having had a weekend where I've been full of stuff coming in from outside, and thinking, Lord, I so need you. And the church service on the radio while I was getting shaved was so crap that I turned over to listen to Ali Jones, who does the other programme. And he was singing a song about one of the guys there was singing. It was all vague spiritual stuff on his programme. But there was somebody talking about the fact, talking a song about God, I need you. And that really got to me because I was thinking, I can't do anything. You know, I've got nothing that's any value. The only stuff that's going to be any value is stuff that comes from God. And I hope that as I'm talking, that to some extent it may be a concentration, it may be almost like homeopathic medicine, but there is at least some element of what God wants to communicate in there. Because that's what we need. We need that change. But it's amazing how quickly it can happen. Because, you see, we live in a big bad world, okay, out there, and we've got our little safe world inside. And the biggest mistake we can make is to think that the big bad world doesn't impinge on our little safe world and doesn't leave us corrupt. If I'd have had more time this morning, I would have wanted to carry on a conversation with Peter and Michelle. We were planning kids' work on Tuesday, and I was listening to both the guys talking about their working day. And it would have been interesting just to listen to how each of us feel that what happens in our working day actually impinges on our spirituality, even if it's trying to bath your child who is being stupid and complaining about the water temperature or messing around with the taps or something. Because suddenly you find that what is out there in the big bad world and getting irritated and not taking people seriously and not being at peace starts to affect you. Yeah, sorry about that, Michelle, but it just sort of stuck there. It was one of those things that I thought, yes, I've been there, done that, got the scars. And so have most of you, where you're thinking, I do not want to behave to my children like this. But something in me is like that. And you can get to feel so bad that you never say anything to anybody, you never bear testimony to the power of Jesus. And of course, part of that's pride, isn't it? Because why should we need to be good in order to talk about Jesus? It's only because we think that we're good and that we've got no angle unless we're good. Yeah? You see what I mean? I know you can argue against that, but I'm sure you get the point. Hey, come on, Halls, get on with it. So you've got the big bad world out there you need to change. If you wanted to have a look at this again about the fire from the altar, you could do John 13 and Peter, when he gets out of his... when he does strange stuff and starts saying, I don't want to have my feet washed. And then he says, oh, I've got to have everything washed. And of course, if we want to follow Jesus, we don't need everything washed. Because we don't go rolling around in the stuff. It's just that when we walk through the world, our feet get dirty. Yeah? Okay, you can do that sermon on your own. You make 3-4 points on it and preach it to yourself during the week. But it's all there in John 13. So you've got small safe world here. You've got the big bad world here. But over here, you've got the holy, holy, holy seraphs flying around world that's awesome. Okay? And it's interesting, isn't it? Because it actually depends which way we're going to get the focus. Whether we're going to stay in our safe world, whether we're going to be overcome by the big bad world, or whether we're going to be in contact with the real awesome world. You know, anything we've got, any problem we've got, any issue we're trying to face can be fixed. Any bad stuff we're dealing with, any personality issues we've got can be fixed. Because God's powerful and his world is bigger than the world outside. And though when we come into God's presence we feel bad, inevitably as well we recognise that God loves us. And because of that we feel good. We know that he's got great things for us. Which is why we say, come just as you are, but don't stay as you are. And that was the important message to Isaiah. He came just as he was, and he thought he couldn't change. But the fire came, touched his lips, and he changed. I'm sure he needed more fire later on, right? I'm sure that sometimes evil overcame good. I'm sure that sometimes he overstated his case. And of course, prophets are no better than anybody else in terms of having an agenda. Next couple of weeks, Louise and Michelle and Peter and I are going to be working with the kids, and we're going to be dealing with the story of Jonah, who was sent with a message of love that he didn't want to take. He wanted God to blast them, right? That was his interest. That's where he was. And he was so certain that he did not want to take God's message of love that he tried to run away. And we can get caught into that as well. That's an interesting thing. Okay, so, guys, we're going to go out into the big bad world. We'll have the feeling sometimes it's because of us. Sometimes we'll have the feeling that we can't make any impact. But we've got a set of values that relate to that. And some of you will be able to remember them. Because we're going to be doing these in Outflow again, actually, in the cell studies starting pretty soon. But there's this first thing about starting from small. But start somewhere. Do what's doable. Because if it isn't doable, it won't get done. Say, wow. Thank God for the small things. But don't exaggerate. And there are 7 in the list, and the rest of them I can't call to mind at the moment. And haven't really got time to go around collecting them all. But the thing that changes then, and this is where it's a bit different from the previous situations, because God spoke to an individual, right, and called their name. But here, what happens is God is asking for volunteers. And I think we find ourselves in this position where Isaiah heard the voice of God saying, who will I send and who will go for us? Who's going to carry on going? Who's available? And then he stood up and said, okay, I've been doing this for 5 chapters. I've been doing this for a chunk of time, but I'm going to go up to the next level. I felt as though society's affected me, that's made it difficult for me. But God, if you want me, here I am, send me. And I wonder if you heard God's voice this morning saying, who will I send? Who will go for us? And I'm pretty certain that if we hear properly, we will hear his voice saying that. Because the fields are white to harvest. The labourers are few. There are people around who need so much help. And God's always saying, who will send? Who will I send? And who will go for us? And you can turn up without excuses. Because if you've been on the road for a long time, there's still further to go. If you're not sure whether you're on your base or your apex like Moses, God can still speak to you and call you. If you're like Samuel, and you've never heard the voice of God before, that can be in there too. Because if we listen, we will hear. I had a real shock the other day. I was reading something, I don't think I mentioned this to you last week, and there was a guy who was writing, and he was talking about this business of hearing God speak and knowing the presence of God. And he said, do you know, he said, I think I'm an atheist. Right. This is a pastor, lecturer in theology. He said, in practical terms, I think I'm an atheist. Because I can walk around for days at a time and not be aware of God. Do you remember a couple of times ago when I was speaking, I actually said that it bothered me about that. And then to go home and on a blog during the week read somebody saying exactly the same thing and suggesting that was practical atheism was a bit of a shock. But I think he's right, you know. I'm never going to become completely not an atheist, I suspect, because there will inevitably be times when I'm not conscious of God. But atheism is to act as though God does, to believe that God does not exist. Practical atheism is to act as though God does not exist. And you think of the tough stuff you run into every day in your life, in bringing up your children, in going to work, in dealing with personal problems, in trying to find enough money to live on, where you just ignore God. And you think, I've got to do this myself. It's atheism, isn't it? Bad position to be in. And I'd really like to stir ourselves up about that. Let's have a little pray for a moment. We've got time, I think, because we did start late today. Have a little pray. So just, if you can sit quietly for a minute, and then we'll see what we do next. As you're sitting before God, I just want to paint a picture for you. It's an old-fashioned picture, but I think I've been thinking about this during the week, and I think it's worth painting. In your mind's eye, we come from a tradition which we've largely detached ourselves from, but it's a tradition of revival and excitement about God. And part of that tradition you see in the Salvation Army, where they used to talk in the streets to people, and they put the big bass drum on its side. And they'd say, is there anybody here who wants to say, here I am, to God? And people in front of all their friends, because quite often they'd be doing this outside a pub or a club or on the street outside people's houses, would actually put down their bottles and the stones that they'd been ready to chuck, and they'd come and kneel at the big drum. And that was hugely, hugely potent for them. And of course it's become a matter of manipulation over the last few years, and things that people have joked about. And I don't think we can just recover that formula. I think there may be times when we want to stick something up at the front and say, let's come and kneel here. But I wonder whether it would be possible for you just to think, if there was a Salvation Army officer back in 19th century England, if there was a big drum that was down, if somebody had said, who wants to step up to the next level? Who wants to say, here I am, I'm available, send me? Then I want you to think about whether you would take yourself from where you are out to the drum. Whether you'd be willing to kneel down and not being sure of what the implications are. Because for Abraham it wasn't, he wasn't sure. He thought it might mean the death of his son. For Moses, he thought it meant that he was going to get lynched, if not by the enemy, by his own people. For Samuel, he was thinking, I just don't know how to do this. I don't know how to talk to God. I can talk to my mum, I can talk to Eli, but hey, this is different. And here's Isaiah saying, I've done this for a few years, it's a bit of a strain, but yeah, I'm in it for the long haul. I'm going to do it. Just wonder whether you'd like to go through the process of saying, yep, I'm up for that. But I want to stop complaining about the fact we need more people, which we do. But I'm going to take the chance that it may just be that I'm the person that I'm looking for. I'm the person to help me. I'm the person to be released to gather other people. And if you are, just seal that in your heart. I'm not going to ask you to indicate it now, because the only reason that I can think of for doing that is to reassure me that I'm pushing the right buttons, and that is not a very good reason for doing anything. But let me pray for those of you who are present and kneeling by the big drum, and pray this way. Lord, we know that we feel inadequate. We know that feeling inadequate is an important part of the package, because it's you who's the one that draws people, not us. We know that we don't have the skill set and we've got lots of responsibilities. But God, we would really like to be part of your program for the place where we work, for our children, for the county where we live, for the world, as well. And we say, if you can use us, here we are. Here we are. Amen. Having said that, I need to discipline myself not to try and keep tally. It's really interesting to have conversations with people who are saying, I'm doing this, this is the way it's working for me, or not working. And not working is good to talk about. Do try and catch hold of Dawn sometime and hear her story. We will actually video it and put it up on the web at some stage, because it is so unbelievably sane. It's about the only angel story I would be prepared to put on the web. Because she comes over as somebody who still has not completely lost it. it's an utterly believable story. Do talk over what we've been saying this morning. I do hope you can stay for lunch. We're next 3 weeks, what's happening? Next week, Rose is speaking. The week after, we've got Joe Enright. And of course, you guys are going to help us some stage deliver the leaflets. And the week after that, I'm back talking again, I think, and we'll probably do a one-off then as a catch-up, because then we've got all the Easter stuff and lots of family events and so on. And then later on, I want to talk about why Jesus was being ironic when he used the word kingdom. So go on Wikipedia, look up the concept of irony. In the meantime, to add to your list of figures of speech like metonymy, which we used this morning, and synecdoche, which is closely related, but I can't remember what that is now. All right, that's it.